If you're a fan of the paranormal world, then you'll love WLTK-DB Talk Radio. Talk shows bringing you the latest on everything paranormal, cryptozoological, metaphysical, true crime, psychic readings, and more. The truth is here and now on WLTK-DB Talk Radio at WLTKDB.com.
Welcome to the official Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Societies podcast. I'm your host, Barnaby, and you're listening to Whispers from the Dark. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. I am your host, Barnaby, and today I am joined with Ma. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
Sort of.
It is very warm. We are recording this in June. And it is 91 degrees right now where we are, so it's a sweltering day here, I'm sure August probably isn't going to be any better. It's supposed to be 91 or 98 tomorrow as well, so. But we have a very, very special guest with us today. Super excited. We're going to be at a live event with him this coming weekend, or actually a couple weeks here. He is from Ghost Hunters International, and the new Ghost Hunters Reunited series as well. He is a lecturer, he is a speaker, he is an author, the one and only Dustin Parry. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, yeah. I asked you how to say it and I messed it up already.
That's okay. As long as you spell it right on the check is all that matters.
That's right. Oh man, how is the weather where you are, Dustin?
New England's interesting. We got into a weird start for summer. It's more like fall. Like, we have, like, a peak of, like, 70 around noon, and then, like, it goes down to the upper 50s at night. So it feels like autumn, which is nice because I'm a big fan of that, so that's all right. I don't like sweltering hot or freezing cold. I like those transition seasons, you know? But something happened. Like, we lost spring, like, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Like, we don't get it anymore. It's like snow and then super hot. So this is a nice, weird little break, and so I'm just going to enjoy it and ride it out and hope that when October comes around, it still feels like fall and it doesn't become like winter overnight.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Halloween and October, too. That's my favorite holidays. I used to own a haunted house, like a seasonal one. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't go in those things. I had the worst time. Like, real places with activity, I'm fine, but those pop-out scary things, like, it's the last one I went in, it wasn't accidentally. I purposely punched somebody, but it was just out of reaction. Like, I would never want to just hit somebody, but I'm not meant for that pop-out scary stuff. I startle super easily, which doesn't make sense if you think about what I do. But at the same time, you know, as you know from being in the paranormal, like, usually the stuff happens very subtly. You know, once in a while you get, like, a big, you know, a knock or a loud bang of something falling over, but usually it's very subtle. So the haunted house scary stuff, I cannot tolerate that at all. Not for me, man.
Cool. Well, it's not for everyone. I mean, I've gotten so blind to it that, you know, like, I can walk through them, and aside from, like, air blasts or stuff like that, nothing really bothers me, like the actors and stuff. So
I would like to enjoy them. I like the concept of it, but I just can't calm my nerves down.
Cool. You need to be an actor in one. And then
maybe.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, maybe if I did that, that'd be. I'll tell you what, a couple of years ago, my daughter, who's 15 now, she must have been around 9 or 10, and I brought her to, like, a haunted hayride. And I was kind of nervous because those I don't mind so much because you can see everything that's coming on, you know, coming around you, so I'm okay. And plus, she was there, so, you know, you're going to be brave and tough anyway. But she's like, super into horror and gore movies like my wife is. I can't stomach that stuff. It gives me, like, anxiety to watch. It's just, I'm not a blood and guts guy. I work in surgery, fine there. But on the screen, it's a problem. But so I told them, like, you know, there's pop-out scary things and this, that, and the other. I said, but none of the actors can touch you, you know, so it's always fine. And the first guy that climbs up, he's got, like, you know, one of the chainsaws going and everything. And he climbs up on the side of the truck, and he looks over, and he looks at my daughter, and she goes, if you touch me, and then she makes that signal across her throat like she's going to kill the guy. And the guy starts laughing, and then he looks at me, he's like, hey, you're the ghost hunter guy. So it was like totally disarmed, and I was just like, it's like my daughter's threatening the horror actors, and, you know, it's good or bad, so she loves that stuff. And my wife takes her all those things. I will go, I will stay in the parking lot, I'll hang out in the car, I will be at the popcorn stand. But it's just one of those things, man.
That sounds fun, man. So we got this great event coming up on September 17th in Ripon, Wisconsin here.
Yeah.
And it's Pawtographs for Charity. And how did you get involved in this? Because I see that he does these all over the United States and stuff, several different events and that. So how did you get involved in that?
So Tim and I met so many moons ago, I really don't recall, you know. And we quickly kind of kicked off a friendship. We both have a love of wrestling, of the paranormal, and of animals. So we had a lot to talk about. And, I know where I met him. I met a little Traverse Bay Parafest many, many years ago. I met him and I met Tim Woolworth the same day. My world of Tims expanded exponentially that day. Both great guys. But Miley told me about, you know, his story and what he was looking to do with Pawtographs at the time. And I was very thankful that he asked me to be a part of it. You know, I've got a small platform from reality TV, and I try to use it as much as I can to help people out. And I do a lot of work for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I do a lot of fundraising efforts. I try to donate for my lectures to them. But you can't help every charity that comes your way. And unfortunately, some people that run charities don't do the best things with the money either, you know. But meeting Tim and hearing his story and seeing what he was doing for the animals, and the fact that a lot of his events, like, animals are unseen, you know, like the shelter is there, and you know that these animals aren't just going to be euthanized, that they're taking care of them. So it meant a lot to have that opportunity. And so though I can't do every charity that comes my way, I try to make sure I do at least one for Tim every year. As long as he'll have me, I'm happy to do it. And we did one over there in Ripon last year, and it was a great time. All the years blend together, but I believe it was last year.
It was.
We went bowling and stuff afterwards. It was such a nice time. It's a different type of event, you know. Like, you still get the paranormal stuff, you get some great lecturers, and you get to talk about wonderful things. And but it's very nice and warming for the heart to know that everyone's there to help raise funds and awareness for these little animals and things that need a little hand up. You know, I always tell people, like, we got to help the big and the small in this world. And, you know, after work, like, I go out back and I feed the squirrels and stuff at my office and everything. Today there were bunnies. It's like I'm running a small, like, petting zoo back there. But, like, I feel bad for them. It's like in the middle of the city. They don't have a lot of options. They didn't ask us to build there, you know. Mm-hmm. So I try to always keep that in mind. So I'm happy to do it. And Tim's such a lovely guy. He's got a great soul. So all good stuff. But working with great people there too. This year we got Chris Williams is there. Shane Pittman, as handsome as the day is long. So we should have a great time.
Cool. For our listeners, we also have Jay Bachochin's going to be there. He's local around here. And we actually worked with him at a convention a couple weeks ago as well. So
Nice. All good people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people going to be there. So you're actually speaking at the event as well, correct?
Yes, as long as they let me, I love to. It's hard to get me off the microphone once I get up there. I often go off script. Like, I always have stuff planned, but then something happens, and then we end up somewhere else. But I don't know. It's weird, man. Like, you know, the paranormal is what brought me to the dance, and I'm happy to talk about that stuff. It's very important to me. But I always tell everybody, you know, with the suicide prevention lectures, the motivational lectures, you know, I speak at middle schools all the way up to corporate events and everything. And I did a lecture for Pixar last year. I was like, I don't know how the heck they found me, but I was like, this is amazing. I was trying not to fanboy out the whole time. But in every lecture that I do, I always feel like it comes back to what has become kind of like my mission statement. You know, I always tell people that I believe that we're spirits going through the human experience, and we're not from here, and we don't stay here. But while we are here, we should be looking after each other a little bit and helping each other out and helping our little animals out too. And I think sometimes maybe that's why it doesn't feel, this world sometimes doesn't feel right. It feels a little itchy, you know, like some things don't make sense. And some people really embrace the plastic and material things in this world, and even the false friendships and relationships. And they really miss out on the soulful nature of it. And that's what I love about the paranormal. It's like, if you're in the paranormal for the right reasons and you're talking about spirit and you're talking about the unknown, you're reaching out for something that's bigger than what's already been given to us. And getting those EVPs or those little flashes of images of something that is not known to us makes us realize that there's something more. And for me, as much as I love the paranormal and I want to talk to spirits and witness all those things, it's more important for me to help the spirits that are here in this life, going through this human experience with me, you know? So I start off usually on a ghost story and I ended up talking about motivational stuff. And then there's a couple of jokes about my hairless cat. And then we get back to reality again. So that's the story arc, but I never know exactly what I'm going to do till I get there, I guess.
Cool. So we were talking about this is a charity event for pets and the animal shelters and stuff. You have a couple pets. Can you tell us about them?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cats now.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I'm allergic to cats. I'm allergic to cats and to dogs. No one here seems to care. My wife and daughter just randomly bring them home. Like, oh, because they get them from shelters, too. I don't know. My wife made some Facebook connection with a woman who picks them up. Oh, she's part of like an Underground Railroad thing for animals from Georgia. And they get like brought up the coast and dropped off at like people that want to adopt them all the way from here up to, I think, New Hampshire or Maine. And so every time they come to Rhode Island, they end up with another cat. And I don't know what's going on with all that. The last one was a little orange cat, and we call him Morris, my little ginger cat. And they bring him in, and he's got like these soft little sad eyes, and he's wearing a little black and white bow tie. And it's like midnight. They wake me up. Look, I'm like, what is that? Like, it's Morris. I'm like, put it back. It's like, why do we have another? The poor little thing, I bring him to the vet. This is a very sad, true story. We bring him to the vet because he's, like, emaciated. Like, the poor thing is literally just bones. And then, like, you know, normal kittens, they run around and play. Morris would just sit there and literally stare at the wall. And I was like, I don't know if he's a little slow or something's wrong with him. I was like, yeah, I feel bad. And so I kept trying to feed him. He wouldn't eat. I looked up online and found, like, a nutrition paste because we had to wait to get him in the vet, you know. So I went and bought this nutrition paste, and man, the little fellow loved it, and he was lapping it up like crazy. And then he started playing and everything, and so I was glad to see that. And he's doing fine now. But we bring him to the vet, and I had a picture I put on Instagram. He's sitting there on the edge of that stainless steel slab, you know, where they visit the pets, and he's got his little bow tie on, this tiny little thing. He's got these big sad eyes, and he just looks so sad. And the woman comes in, the veterinarian, she says, well, make sure that he gets a lot of moist, wet food, you know. I said, oh, we usually just feed dry food to the cats, except for Raisin, who is my little girl, my little Sphinx cat. She gets boiled chicken because she's special. But I give a little bit to all the other ones, but she gets to sit on the counter and eat next to me because she's my girl. But I said, well, is there a reason he needs, you know, the wet food? And they said, well, male cats have a tendency to get dehydrated a lot, which causes crystallization, gives them trouble with their urine and everything. And then I swear to you, this was the words in the room, and I'm in the room along with my wife, my daughter, the veterinarian and her assistant, and we're the only two males in the room, myself and Morris, and she says to me, he may have trouble anyway, because he was taken from his mother so young, he didn't have a chance to nurse and wean, so he has a very small penis, and it's not going to grow. And I swear, he looked up at me like, I was like, I'm so sorry, dude, like, the only good thing is we only have female cats at home, so they've never seen another one, so you're fine. But poor little guy, like, nobody wants to hear that. No guy wants to hear that, feline or otherwise, you know? Aww. Poor little fellow. I feel so bad for him. So I try to make sure he gets his wet food and stuff because we don't want any problems with his little male parts. Things you didn't think you were going to talk about today, huh? Yeah, here we are, cat penis.
Absolutely. Wherever it goes, that's where we're going to go.
That's right. Come to Pornographs.
Very cool. Yeah, this is definitely, this event, the Pornographs event, is definitely unique, the bowling event, because, like I said, we both said that the event happened last year as well in Ripon, and we were going to come last year, me and my team and stuff, but we were actually at another event out of state, so we couldn't make it to the event. We're going to be there this year. We have a booth and stuff. And I see on the poster there, it's sponsored by ACW Pro Wrestling.
Right. I don't know how he's got these connections, but yeah, there were people there last year talking about wrestling, and this guy knows this guy and that guy. I was like, awesome. It all comes together.
I'm friends with Tim on Facebook.
Yeah.
And here's a little trivia for you. I actually, he was taking pictures with a gentleman by the name of Joey Avalon. Who's a local pro wrestler around here.
Yeah.
I used to do pro wrestling.
Oh, really?
And I know and have wrestled Joey Avalon. That's awesome. And I was like, wait a minute. I know that guy. And cool. He's part of ACW. So I was kind of full circle there that, you know. Yeah. So
nice. Yeah. You're running good circles then, sir.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So we wanted to ask you some questions and stuff today on the show about some stuff that, you know, you probably don't usually get asked, or we're hoping that they're not the same questions that you always get asked. Because, you know, I do shows and I do podcasts and stuff as well, and people always ask the same questions. So my first question for you then, sir, is on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, we always see you wearing AEW t-shirts.
Yeah.
So who is your favorite AEW wrestler?
MJF seems like an easy pick. The kid's got such a great future ahead of him. I really am a fan. Brian Pillman Jr. doesn't get as much TV time as I wish he would. I've met him a couple of times. He's kind of friendly with me on Twitter. Like, we'll direct message each other. I like him a lot. I'm very excited for all that the Ass Boys have to bring. I think they're fantastic. Danhausen, I knew his dad for many years, so I'm an instant Danhausen fan. I love the Acclaimed, but if I had to pick one, I think Eddie Kingston.
Really?
Eddie Kingston, although no pomp and circumstance, no flair, he's just... I don't know if you ever watched his What Culture WWE, What Culture Wrestling on YouTube. It's a video podcast thing from overseas in the UK. And Simon Miller, who's a wrestler out in the UK, does ups and downs for all the shows. And sometimes they're better than Raw and SmackDown, to be quite honest. Like, I look forward to the review show. But he has sometimes this counter when he does AEW, called "Does Eddie Kingston realize wrestling is real? Is fake? Yes or no?" Because, like, he gets so into it, like, he delivers such unbelievable microphone skills, and like, his stories are just so emphatic, and so, like, the anger that's in there, it's like, man, this guy's so great, you know. So yeah, you know, he may not have like six pack abs, and he may not have like a big fancy robe to come into the ring, but he's just out there, and he's just doing it, and you can just see, like, full throttle, all heart, and I appreciate that, you know? I appreciate that. I like the work.
I see, man. I gotta disagree, man. I got two favorites over there, and you didn't even pick either of them.
All right. Is Britt Baker one of them? I like Britt Baker.
No. Good old Freshly Squeezed.
Oh, yes.
Orange Cassidy.
Cassidy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Little thumbs up.
And
I'm looking forward to his match. Well, it'll be, by the time this goes on, it'll be over. But his Forbidden Door match should be good.
Oh.
So he's got a lot going on.
Yeah, he does.
He's got a lot going on.
He's come a long way from. I've seen some of his stuff before AEW, but when he first debuted in the the Battle Royal was at the casino show they did.
Oh, yeah.
What is this?
Right, yeah. It's like this weird gimmicky thing, hands in my pockets, bouncing around, but amazing. Mm-hmm. But you're like, how far can you take that gimmick? And he's taking it pretty far.
Climbed a long way, yeah.
I love when they had him on commentary one night and he just sat there. So brilliant. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Who was the other one?
Luchasaurus.
Oh, Luchasaurus is great.
Well, they're my two favorites over there.
Yeah, Luchasaurus is great. I mean, I worry for what's going to happen when Jungle Jim goes on and does his own thing, Jungle Jack.
Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to make him older now and just call him Jungle Jack, or at least JR does. But I worry when they split up, like, what happens to Luchasaurus, you know? But for a big guy, man, the moves that he, like, the jumps off the tops of the ropes, the flips, mm-hmm. and everything. I mean, when you see a stack of tables, you know who's going through it. It's like, he's really something. He's amazing.
Yeah, some of these guys that are really big, you know, like the tall guys and stuff like that. And then you see Luchasaurus next to him. And he dwarfs a lot of the guys that you think are pretty big and stuff. So,
right. Yeah. We just met, my buddy and I went to a local show, and Brett was there. FTR was there. Brian Pillman. A couple other guys, and I was excited to meet FTR because I've never seen them, so I want to go meet those guys. And I took a photo of my buddy's like, how are you taller than both of them? I'm like, I don't know, like, on TV everyone looks like a huge monster, you know, like, I mean, they're still like jacked, but I was like, yeah, I didn't realize that.
We always make a joke that you have to be over 6 feet to be on TV. You meet any of these the personalities like yourself and the other, you know, the ghost hunters and everybody, and they're all like 6 foot or more, you know. And then you
there's Joe Chin. Joe Chin is always a smaller fella, you know. But they don't breed a lot of tall people from his family. All his family was small. So, that's another thing too. People come to the events and they'll come up to me like, "I didn't realize you're so tall." It's like, thanks. So the hair adds an inch or two. The cut also, but for sure.
Yeah, we first met you at the Minnesota Parunity Convention.
Oh, it was in July last year, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah.
And you and Ben Hansen. And Ben Hansen is another, like, considered
like
the top of the partitions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's very tall fella. Big dude. And he's big, too. Like, big, broad shoulders and everything. And that's just natural. That's not like, he doesn't have to work for that. Like, I wish I could do that. Like, I eat a lot of pizza and I drink beer. So I always have to go to the gym just to balance out, you know? So, I don't know. If I may ask, how old are you? You don't have to give me exact age, but like, around what generation were you born? 70s, 80s?
87.
You might have missed it. Mom, maybe Mom remembers. Mom, do you remember the McDLT? It was a McDonald's sandwich called McDLT. Remember when they used to have those styrofoam containers?
Yeah.
The McDLT came in what looked like a spaceship because it was long. And it had two parts. And it was a bluish part and a reddish part. And the idea was... the meat and the bun would be on one side, so it would stay hot under the heating lamps. Yeah, and then they had the lettuce and tomato on the other top of the bun, and the blue part that would be not in the heating lamps, so you could take your cold part and warm part together, and you'd still get a lukewarm McDonald's burger, but at least they made you feel like you got something special.
Yeah.
And so that's my dieting technique, is the McDLT effect. I eat a lot of pizza, and I enjoy beer and cider, but then I go to the gym for 2 hours and walk around for a while just to keep it balanced out, you know? So we're not going to have six-pack abs anytime soon, but, you know, we're doing okay. We're looking okay in a t-shirt. That's the goal. Stay healthy.
Very cool. So you are back on TV again recently on the Ghost Hunters. Is it Reunited or
something like that's called? I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know if it's just Ghost Hunters or I'm not sure. But, yeah, we've been back together. I can't do every episode with them. Because I still have the day job. I made the mistake of keeping the day job and everybody else said, let's embrace TV. It's like, no, I'm going to stay in healthcare. But but they're nice enough to still bring me out and to ask me to come on some cases and stuff with them. So, I did, I think, 3 in the season that's airing now. And then the new season that we're filming for, we're on break now until the end of August, I think. But I already filmed 3 or 4 for this one. So hopefully I get to do some more in the fall and the winter with these guys. And honestly, the whole Ghost Hunter thing has been such a blessing for me. Like, I first popped up in, like, season 2 of the original Ghost Hunters, and I was kind of back and forth again, always a day player because of work and everything. And then I left, and I got married and settled down, and then the international thing happened, and then I did that for, like, 2 years, but I missed being home, my wife and daughter, and, you know, the internet and everything. I used to have to go to a dial-up cafe. I used to have to find an internet cafe that had dial-up and buy a little, like, prepaid card so I could use it and try to Skype, and like it was always poor video quality, so you're just sending emails, and we would be gone like 6 to 8 weeks at a time. So I really missed my family, and that's kind of why I came back. It's like, it just doesn't make sense for me. As much as I was thankful to have traveled, I think I've been to 26 or 27 countries, so it was an amazing experience. I never thought I'd be able to do that, but I was just heartbroken not being home with the ones that I loved, but I was sacrificing to make sure, you know, the lights were still on and things are getting taken care of. So, and then I came back and, you know, they had me out for the last 2 final seasons of Ghost Hunters, where everybody kind of went their separate ways. I worked with KJ a lot those years. That was fun. And, Jay didn't forget about me. We went to Ghost Nation. He had me come do an appearance with those guys one time. And once they get this one back up, he called again. So I'm very thankful to him for that. And been having a heck of a time, you know. It's really fun. Like, I've never stopped investigating. I investigate locally. My buddy Cody, who's been on a couple of the episodes now himself, he and Satori. So I never stopped investigating, just stopped doing TV for a little bit.
Very cool. So you have some questions as well for Dustin.
Sort of.
We'll jump back to you and see what you got.
Sort of, she says.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well,
she's got a list, but...
All right.
I just don't know. I don't know. I was just wondering, like, which would you rather investigate, like, the church that, you know, has, a history to it, or the cemetery next to it?
I'd be more of a church person, you know. Cemeteries for me are interesting. I go to them a lot. I like to walk just like during the day, relax. I usually put my earbuds in, just kind of chill out. I am a, I want to say honorary caretaker of a cemetery nearby. The caretaker doesn't know I do it, but I go through on the weekends. Like, take, he's an older fellow, you know, he's very nice, but there's like big branches and stuff that fall from all the storms. So I take them and carry them in the woods. I bought the correct stuff to clean the stones. So they have a water pump there. So if it's nice out, I go clean some stones. I buy the veterans flags from the veterans site online. I change them out. For me, it's not a place to investigate. Although the one I go to is just it's just north of here in Massachusetts, up in Rehoboth, which has a great folklore of this story of the redheaded phantom of Route 44. I remember reading it as a kid, a hitchhiking ghost story. But there's a great old cemetery there, and that cemetery I go to also has residual activity that's pretty well known, you know, because it used to all be farmland, and so there's some things that happen there. But for me, I just never. I don't know, if you're looking for intelligent spirit, I mean, I like to think that maybe the cemetery is like a touch point, like when you go, like around whenever to try to communicate with your loved ones or just pay respect. I like to think that that's a place that they can kind of come back to or visit. But I personally, and it, I always tell people, you can believe whatever you like. I never believe that anyone is ever trapped anywhere. And if I did believe that, I wouldn't believe they'd ever be trapped standing over their body in the cemetery, you know, and be like, everyone's just kind of all in line, like waiting over their corpse, like hoping somebody visits this week. That doesn't work for me. But I love old buildings. I specifically love churches. I'm a Christian, but I like all religions. I find great things in all the major faiths. It all comes back to love at the end of the day. Different prophets, different skin colors, different tongues, different words for different people. But it all means the same thing. And so I think that a loving God or goddess, however you perceive them, allows for visitation from spirit. And I think that we're supposed to look into and be curious about what happens afterwards. And I also think it gives us, honestly, the main reason I agreed to do the show originally was I thought by doing this, I could maybe play an EVP or capture some evidence and show somebody that would give them pause and make them think, okay, there's something after this life, and maybe while I live this life, I should do something good. Maybe I should try to help somebody else, you know, not out of fear. I'm not a fire and brimstone person, but just out of the idea that, okay, there's more than this. So I need to think of a higher thing and be a loftier and better person. So those are the kind of things I think about. I think about weird stuff, but yeah. So church, that's my answer.
Church. Okay. That's good.
So were you involved in like in paranormal investigating and stuff? Were you going out and doing that like when you were a kid and stuff prior to all the ghost hunting stuff?
Yeah, for sure. The disclaimer I always have to tell everybody is don't do this stuff. But when I was a kid, we had an abandoned funeral home that we used to, we set up like a bike ramp in the parking lot and everything. There may or may not have been an adult magazine hidden behind the bushes that all the guys knew were there. Nobody ever took it home, but we knew where it was. Sorry, Mom. There was, you know, there's a plywood cover on one of the windows that was a little loose maybe. So we would go in there and there's like a casket in the basement and like, you know, so you can lay in the casket the longest, and like just stupid stuff to kind of scare each other. Then there was, what we used to call the old witch's house, which there was never any research done to find out if it was, but it was like a 3-walled like stone house out in the woods, down near Smithfield, Rhode Island. And we would go there and, you know, again, no real activity ever denoted, but the stories, you know, the folklore, the legend, the chance to go out and explore it. My favorite place was called the Ladd School, and it was 5 buildings that was originally built, I want to say it was in 1918 by Dr. Henry Joseph Ladd, and it was very sad, you know, it was for children that had different mental problems and learning disabilities. And at the time it was like a very small, like 1-room schoolhouse. And it made all these like 5 other buildings later, 5 buildings in total. Hundreds and hundreds of people ended up living there. But, you know, we're very quick to jump back to, you know, you hear stories about places like the different like Trans-Allegheny, the sanatoriums, or even places like Waverly with tuberculosis. And yeah, we were trying to help patients, but you know, some of the things that they did by today's standards were just awful. But we forget, like in 1918, some of these kids were getting dropped off at the Ladd School without as much as an introduction. You know, sometimes just like something pinned to them with what their name was. Parents didn't understand why their child was acting this way. They didn't know what to do. They hear about this guy. And they're like, well, maybe they can help him. And they would just leave him there. So, yeah, some of the stories were barbaric. But at the same time, you know, he had a small staff and they tried to do the best they could. And unfortunately, you know, it became overpopulated. Disease became a problem. I've researched this quite extensively because it was something that I really enjoyed investigating. But they destroyed all the buildings. Now it's like an industrial park. But that's where I would go. And the last time I ever went there, I think I almost said I was a freshman on Ghost Hunters. I think it was like around the first time I was with Ghost Hunters. And you know, it was just myself and a couple of people. I was working in an ambulance company at night. And people would just show up in the parking lot. I was the local ghost guy, and I would take them to places. And so we went there one night, and I would always park on the other side of the woods and walk in through the woods because there was also shadow figures in the woods. And there was one road that went into this industrial park, the hospital lot, rather, for it. And the cops just had to block that one road, and you were stuck. And that night, I think there was like 17 or 20 people they got arrested for trespassing. But I was able to go out through the woods with the people I was with. So again, don't do these things. Abandoned buildings are very dangerous. Like, you know, I would never want somebody to like fall down like a lot of these places, you know, not the police don't have it closed and condemned because they don't want you to interact with spirits. They don't want you to fall and get hurt. And, you know, you can't get help in these places. Unfortunately, you know, every fall people get into amateur ghost hunting and they wanted to go get scared and a lot of people get hurt. So stay out of the abandoned buildings. That's definitely how I started. I didn't know there were groups. And until I saw Ghost Hunters, I'm like, wait, these guys are getting invited in homes? I'm like, what? How did I miss this? So lots of emails and a meeting at a coffee shop later, and I get to join the team. I worked with the home team for a couple months, and then I get to do some episodes.
Very cool. Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, like there was other investigators out there and stuff doing paranormal and that, but if you weren't really into it, looking at libraries and stuff, I think for a lot of people, Ghost Hunters was probably their, you know, baptism into the paranormal world, that people actually went out and did that, you know. So
yeah, for sure. It was definitely like a gateway for a lot of people, you know. And back when I first started, you know, I was 15 years old. So we're talking late 80s or so, early 90s. There's no internet, you know, so I'm going to the library to find books about New England legends and Native American grounds and hauntings and these kind of things. That's where I had to go to get started on my journey. And I remember I've learned so much just, you know, first meeting Steve and Jay and Grant and like picking their brain about things that they've done. And then I was nervous being on camera. I used to work for a local CBS and Fox News station. I was a show editor. I was a camera operator. I was a satellite truck operator. And I was never on the other side of the camera. So all of a sudden I'm setting up equipment I'm unfamiliar with. And I've got people like filming me. I'm like, I feel so, even today, I dummy set up those cameras quite a bit and just walk away. Once the cameraman leaves, I go back and set it up the way I need to. I can't work under the pressure of the lens being right there. So I just make it look nice and walk away. And I go back and like tweak it and tighten it and level it and do all those things. I'm a shy boy. What can I say?
I find it really interesting. Like I've talked to, you know, I'm big into cryptids and stuff like that, you know, Bigfoot and all those. And I listen to Cliff Berrickman and Bobo's podcast.
Yeah.
And those guys talk a lot about how the show was produced. You know, like when they first were brought in for the first season, they talk about how they were asked, you know, can you recreate this, you know, like reenact, you're like, oh, we heard something. Oh, we didn't get that on camera. Can you do it again? Yeah. You know, and stuff like that. And they're like, that's not how we Bigfoot, you know?
Right.
So I'm interested in, from your perspective, you know, having done, you know, Ghost Hunters International and stuff, and now being back into it with the new season and that, how has your experience with the filming and the industry and stuff changed? Do you find that they're more open to just letting you guys do your thing and documenting it? Or I think isn't Ghost Hunters produced by Jason?
Yeah, I was raised in a spoiled way because Jay always had a hand in the production.
Yeah.
So we were never told we had to act in any certain way. We were always able to just do what we do. The only thing we ever would recreate would be like when you walk through that door, you put the tri-field meter on the shelf. can you just put it back there so I can get a tight shot of your hand putting it on the shelf? But that would always be after we were done investigating that room and we're leaving. They're like, you guys can just come back and just put this down. So it was just like tight shots of walk through the door, put this here, put that there. But even those are very few. They kind of just let us flow into our thing. Because I think they realized a lot of that stuff they didn't really need anyway. But in terms of ever like reacting or trying to recreate any of that stuff, honestly, one of the biggest moments that ever happened to me was never actually caught on film. And that was when we were in, it was still Ghost Hunters. We were in Ireland for Leap Castle. And they did the best they could to show the sequence of events. But as I'm in the chapel, or the bloody chapel, because it's television, I get knocked down to the ground. And what happened was, I was up there with Dave Tango. At the time, using a provoking technique, which is not something that I do now. I think is more call for a cerebral approach to the field and trying to have a conversation rather than get a one-off scratch or push or whatever. But at the time, that's what I was doing. I was younger and I was still learning my way. We still learn as we do this today. And things were happening and Barry came upstairs. First time I ever met Barry Fitzgerald, a very good friend of mine now. And he's like, oh, the pressure's rising and this is happening. Whatever you guys are doing, you got to stop. And he goes back downstairs and Tango, innocent as the day is long, he's like, oh, we better stop provoking and things. I'm like, oh, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But that guy puts whiskey on his Lucky Charms. Just do what you want. And so we continue. And it does build to some things, but then it quiets down. And as we're leaving, the camera operator says, if you guys just wait, I'm going to get a shot of the tri-field meter. And he wanted to get a perspective, a point of view shot with the camera of where there was an area to the front of the chapel that had a shaft that went down to, I believe, the basement, where supposedly they had spikes where they would throw their enemies down there. So he wanted to get this point of view thing. So Dave and I are just waiting because he didn't want us to leave without him, the camera operator. So we're standing side by side. Now, in the video sequence of the episode, you don't see us standing side by side. They had to splice it because I was not being filmed. As the camera operator is over to the side getting this perspective, Dave and I are standing there. And Dave swears to this day that he actually saw my feet raise up off the ground before I get knocked backwards. Now, it happened so fast for me, I had no idea what happened. It felt like if you're ever at the ocean and you get hit by a wave, like I got lifted up, like there was no impact. It was just like something lifted me up and dropping me on the rocks. Because, of course, also if you watch the episode, there's pretty much hay bales everywhere except where I was standing, which was all just rocks. So I also learned, just in case, stand in front of something soft, there's an option. But what they had to do was they had to edit what they had. So they took some video of where I was walking toward the back of the chapel. And you see, I must like turn my ankle or something because it wasn't very even. So it looks like I kind of go to the side. And then they spliced that with my camera, which I was still filming because being an old camera operator for CBS, like you don't cut the roll. You don't stop filming until you're absolutely out of the location. So I was just standing there like this talking to Dave. So they had that perspective of, you know, all of a sudden the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So they spliced those two things together. But the camera operator wasn't filming us at all, actually, when it happened. So he gets the reaction, but he misses the actual action of it all. But I always feel like things happen for a reason. A lot of times, especially with intelligent spirits, you know, they don't do what you want them to do. They don't perform on command. It's, you know, back when we used to use tape, it was when you were changing tape. You know, it's when you're stopping down to eat, like when you're setting up. That's when they do stuff. Then it's like, hey, can you do this? They're like, nah, not going to do it. So I kind of feel like if he was filming me, it may never have happened anyway. So I'm thankful for the way it happened. And credit to Pilgrim for the production company for not saying like, hey, could you do this or whatever to try to recreate it. We could always just do whatever we wanted.
Very cool. You have any more questions off your list?
I was just trying to think. I don't know how to word it, but what would it take to scare you or whatever so much that you wouldn't want to investigate anymore?
I don't know. I mean, it's not like a bravado thing because I definitely do frighten easily in terms of like I talked about, like, you know, pop-out scary things bother me. You know, even the Leap Castle thing was the most physical interaction in terms of the paranormal I've ever had. And I went back in that night, and I went back in the second night. Nothing else happened. I don't know. I don't think there's anything that could ever keep me from going back into place to check it out. You know, I'm just very inquisitive by nature. And again, not just like a macho thing, but I don't really fear any of that. You know, it's not that I don't believe that there's darkness that exists within it, because there's darkness in this world, so there's darkness in that one, of course. But I'm in a very good place. I always tell people, I don't think you should investigate any paranormal stuff unless you're in a really good place, you know, physically and emotionally and spiritually and mentally. And although I'm a little bit wonky sometimes, I feel like I'm in a really good place. So I don't worry about any of that kind of stuff. I don't worry about spiritual attachments or anything. I don't think there's anything in particular that would stop me from going back to any place or stop doing what I've been doing.
Have you ever had a shadow person, like, not attack, but, you know, come pretty close to you?
Shadow people are one of the most interesting things, I think. I actually have a new lecture about shadow people that I'm debuting this fall. My first encounter was with a shadow person when I was a kid, and this was at my childhood bedroom. Now, people sometimes classify all these things together. You know, we have Hat Man. We've got, mm-hmm. you know, what looks like a huddled black mass. We've got sometimes one that seemed to, like, appear in twos. This was, to me, a very classic, you know, physical shape of a human, but no distinguishing features. I'm in bed. I'm around 9 years old. My parents are awake. We have a small home. There's a hallway that connects their bedroom in the living room to my bedroom in the kitchen. So it's kind of like, you know, a big letter H. And the hallway lights on. My parents are awake in the living room diagonal from my bedroom, and they're watching TV. And I just get this weird kind of feeling. And as I look over to the door, there is this figure standing there. And if anybody hasn't seen one before, if you've ever been to a gas station on a really hot day, you see those vapors come up. That's what it looked like it was made of. Like this dark, grayish, moving like vapor, but perfectly outlined as a person. I was terrified. I just covered my head and I said my prayers. I was like, I never want to see this thing again. And I never did. I lived there till I was 17 or 18. But that was the moment that planted that seed in my head. And I was curious, like, what was this thing? Why was it there? And mm-hmm. what else is out there? Since I've done this work now, it's going to be 30 years this summer, this fall. I've seen them all over the world, and usually this particular one is usually like six and a half feet tall, or about 2 or 2.5 feet tall. Very, very quick. I never record any audio with them. In Doylestown, Pennsylvania, we did an American Legion Hall. It's the only place I've ever actually witnessed both the tall and the small one. And the lights actually went off when we saw one in during the setup. I think it was Amy and Chris were doing setup, and I was in the van. And like as soon as you saw the thing, the lights went off in the room. So that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know too much about them, and that's why I started putting this lecture together, because I was very curious mm-hmm. about what they are. And there's so many different theories. But I'm very thankful to it, because that's kind of what put me on this road to do all the things that I've done since then. And I think about, you know, we started talking about Tim's event, about helping the animals and everything. If I don't have that shadow figure experience, I don't have the platform to lend my name, whatever level it may be, like a D, maybe D+, but I'm able to help out a little bit, you know? And if I don't have that experience, none of these other things happen. Mm-hmm. So, I don't feel like it was anything evil, and it's definitely something that still piques my interest today. Anytime I do a case, I'm like, oh, we have a shadow figure. I'm like, oh, good. That's where I really wanted to focus, you know?
Okay.
I noticed in the episode, I just watched the first episode of The New Ghost Hunters last night again at the prison. And I noticed that you have bracelets, like the stone bracelets and stuff. And when I do investigations, I have like protection bracelets and stuff. And I was wondering if you believe in that stuff, and what bracelets you have, or you have any protection stuff like that.
Sure. So it was funny, when I was a kid, I started like, a collection of like all different quartz and amethysts and crystals and stuff, just because I was into it, you know. And one of the first tools I ever used to try to communicate was just a quartz crystal on like a leather lanyard. You know, just trying to ask, you know, counterclockwise for no, or clockwise for yes, or that kind of thing. But I shake a lot, so I can never get any definitive answers with that. And I tried using a stand. I think there's something to be said about the spirit that's inside us to have that connection, you know. No matter what equipment that you're using, and that's why I get kind of fidgety with equipment. Like, it's good for purposes of measurement as we know it. You know, we really don't know all the answers. But I have a hard time when people want to do an investigation and they just stare at the equipment all night. Like, light this up to red, light this up to red. You might miss something going on.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Dustin! Dustin disappeared.
Just like that. You might miss something.
You might miss something.
Does he have to, like, call back or something?
He should just be able to rejoin the same way because the meeting's still in progress. Dustin.
Come back.
Dustin.
You might miss something. Yep, poof, gone.
You might miss something.
Speaking of the
equipment. There we go.
Speaking of equipment malfunction.
What happened?
I have no idea. You said, speaking of missing something, and then everything went black.
Yeah, I talked negative about equipment, and all the equipment shuts off. It's because the robots are always listening. My wife and daughter think I'm crazy, but I always thank Alexa at the end of the day for her help. And just in case, you know, they take over, they're like, well, this guy would always say thank you and good night at the end of the day, you know, like my robot servants for when they become overlords. Maybe I will be in the hierarchy somehow. But anyhow, I have problems with people that focus, hyper-focus on equipment during investigations because I feel like, although we can use it to measure things, like, if spirit's in here and we're trying to talk to spirit out there, why do I need to have a robot in between the two of us, you know? Mm-hmm. I think we've lost a lot of our way in terms of connecting to the other side. Like, the native tribes and the early people didn't have to get a REM pod out to have interaction or to speak and to understand the other side. So I think that our world has become so loud and so noisy and so fast and we're so distracted that we've separated ourselves from our spirituality, both in a religious sense and also just in a personal sense. And I think that connection is so important. And that's why I really like investigating. But in terms of gemstones and protection and stuff, although I had a collection of them and I like them a lot, I don't have anything in terms of protection. I used to carry a rosary with me all the time, but then it broke, so I just kind of kept it at home. I do have a medal in my truck that I've had since I started driving. But other than that, all these are just kind of fancy. I change them up from time to time. I've always had like a leather bracelet like from when I was a kid. Just one of those guys, I guess. Not for everybody, but some people like me. But yeah, so that's what I wear, you know. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Cool. I did a Bigfoot case, by the way. You mentioned Bigfoot before.
That was my next question. I was going to say, you've been all over the world and stuff and everything.
Okay, yeah.
Have you?
Look out, Chip Coffee! I'm coming for you, baby.
Have you ever had any creatures or cryptids or Bigfoot or any of that stuff?
I love roaming the woods all the time. Like I just like, especially at nighttime. I actually got lost once, and I was so embarrassed. A fog came in. I was looking behind the cemetery that I go to, and I heard there was like an old building back there. So I went to check it out, and a fog came in. And I couldn't find my way back. And I was like, oh my God, like eventually my wife's going to realize I'm missing. And then like my truck's outside the cemetery, so they know I'm somewhere over there. But I'm like, I just don't want to make the news and be like, you know, ghost hunter Dustin Perry lost in the woods, like some idiot. But luckily I heard a motorcycle and I just kept walking in that direction because I was like, well, there had to be a road over there somewhere. I was like 5 miles away, but that's all right. I found my way back. Well, all my time walking around in the woods and stuff, I've never seen anything. I did walk around overseas quite a bit, and I was somewhere in Europe. I want to say it was either Prague or the old Czech Republic, and it may just be a regular native thing to them. But I saw some little bird that looked like scaly almost. Like instead of feathers, it looked like, I don't know, like you would imagine like a tiny dinosaur or something, like almost like lizardish. It was very odd. But again, it could have been something natural to them. I just don't know what it was. But I filmed a sizzle reel because I tried to pitch my own show. They actually made it a show. They just took me off it. But it was originally going to be called Paranormal Highway. It ends up becoming Haunted Highway with Jack Osborne. So yeah. Jack Osborne can thank me for getting him started in the paranormal. Now, Jack was really cool. They brought Jack out. Jack and I didn't film on this part of it, but Jack and I filmed in California. He was so nice. We had a great time. And I get it. Like, his dad's a rock and roll star. You know, my dad's a truck driver. Like, only one of us could go through. So, but Jack and I had a great time filming. And I felt really embarrassed because we were off camera and we were driving to location. And I had Sirius XM on. And the Ozzy song is on. And I'm singing. And I'm like, oh, my God. I am butchering an Ozzy song right in front of his son. I was like, I need to stop because I'm always singing things. But But I am in somewhere in the Four Corners there. I want to say it was New Mexico. And they take me out to a place where the natives say they see skinwalkers. And so I go out there and we do a full investigation for a couple of nights. I was with, who was with me at that time? I was supposed to work with Gile DePardo, but she had a flight problem. I was with Angela. I was with Angela Alderman, who was with me on Ghost Hunters International. And so we're there, and we get some weird thing on thermal that I couldn't figure out. And usually the thermal I try to explain because I don't believe it's very paranormal most of the time. But this was. And we go back, and we look at the footage and everything. And the next night, everything's, like, super quiet. And the natives that we're with, they're like, yeah, we go, you know, looking for squatch down in this area. Would you want to go? I'm like, heck yeah. It's like, let's go do that. That'll be fun. Like, even if we don't find anything, let's go. And so we go, and there's like this cavern system and everything with, you know, the idea is that maybe they live underground. So we're down there checking that out. And nothing came of it. There was a scare of perhaps a large a mountain cat of some kind. I don't know what it was. But then we go back up, and it's like, I want to say 2 o'clock-ish in the morning, and maybe some of the locals had to move a sign that said government property before we went out there to film. So we want to be super quiet, and they come to me because I was a producer on it, and they're like, the rest of the natives want to know if it's okay for them to fire their guns. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, what do I care? And they're firing all these guns in the air. Like 2 a.m., I'm like, okay, let's wrap it up. Let's get back to the truck before we all get arrested. But no squatch was seen, but we had a heck of a time, you know. It was great. And I get to eat a whole pie. Then we were going to do a time lapse where I was meeting, oh, I can't remember the gentleman's name now. He's actually pretty well known in the crypto field too. But I was meeting him to discuss, you know, the idea of the skinwalkers at this place. And I was supposed to meet him at a diner. And so to show the passage of time, they're like, you know, everyone knows I like to eat pie. They're like, we'll put a whole pie in front of you. And then, you know, you'll eat a slice, and then we'll take it away. We'll put back crumbs, and we'll, like, you know, make it look like you ate the whole thing. It's like, no, I'm going to eat the whole thing. And we did a full time lapse where I get to eat an entire cherry pie. It was fantastic. It was wonderful. So that was good. But, yeah, sure didn't work out for me, but it worked out for Jack, and he's done some great things since. So I'm happy for him and Katrina with their Portals to Hell show. And Jack's got a couple of new things out, too. They look really interesting. So everything works the way it's supposed to. People get all bent out of shape about things. You got to follow the path. Like, things work. You just got to, you know, in God's time, do good things and good things happen.
Speaking of the path, you are very busy, sir. You have all kinds of stuff. You have several books out. You have, you know, you're back on Ghost Hunters. You're lecturing all over. And you also have a new thing with Brian Cano called Pathways.
Good so stuff.
You got an event coming up, I believe, in November here. November in St. Augustine, Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So tell us about Pathways. What is that?
Pathways is a very unique experience for paranormal fans. And I think it's hard for some people to wrap their heads around. We've made videos about it. People still don't seem to get it. But it started because, so my motivational speaking that I do, one of my favorite lectures is called The Magical Mystery Box. And my wife calls it my big box of crap. But what I have is just this big box that's got, like, broken toys and weird little knickknacks and stuff all in it. And I change the items in the box all the time, so it's not always the same. But as a presenter, I love interacting with the audience. And in the fall, I'm very thankful to be booked up, you know, with all the lectures and everything and going from library to library telling ghost stories and stuff. But it's the same stories. You start to memorize, like, the jokes for each slide, and it's the same pattern all the time. So I want to have more fun. And in the motivational thing, I was like, it's hard for me to be motivational, like it's the same story all the time. So the Magical Mystery Box was my idea to interact with the people. So every lecture is always going to be different because there's different items in the box. I call on people from the audience. They come up and select an item out of the box. We talk about why they chose it, see where that story is. And then I tell the story behind whatever that item is and what the motivational tie-in I believe to be. And then we move on to the next one. So not all items get chosen. You never know which ones are going to be next. So it keeps me on my toes as a presenter. It keeps the energy level up. And we've done that from middle schools all the way up to corporate lectures and stuff. Some people even get continuing education credit for that lecture. And I did like a South Dakota, a North Dakota, one of the Dakotas. I was there for, like, it was a conference for all the social workers in the state. and like they get CE to come see me, and it was crazy, but it was a lot of fun. And so Brian and I go, and we're doing a paranormal event together that we've never worked before. We see each other at events, we never get to do anything, and we seem to have natural chemistry. We do another one, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to do tonight with everybody. And I mentioned, I was like, why don't we just, you know, like, we could maybe give them a choice. He's like, yeah, that's a great idea. So we started to chart it out. Okay, we're going to do, you know, the group session, and then we'll have a choice. You can go upstairs to the library, or we'll go downstairs to the basement. And then you come back, and we're going to do this again. And then we'll go here or there. And then this was working so well. We're like, we should go and film locations that people can't get access to all the time, and then bring it to theaters all across the country. So investigators that are interested in, like, we're doing one at Strauss Mansion, we did one at the USS Salem up in Massachusetts, you can see these without having to go to them, and every event is always different. So you come to a Pathways lecture, and it's an event, you get a an auctioneer's paddle. And on one side, there's the wavy lines, and the other side is a star, and you use those to vote. So, you know, before you even come to the event, Brian has it set up on the ticket page where you select a card. And depending on what card everybody picks, that's which module we're going to do that night. And then these people get broken into teams when we go there, and they vote. Okay, are we going to the basement? Are we going, you know, to the attic, and we're going to use the obelisk, or we're going to the basement and do a seance. And then we come back, and then it's a fun little game too, because Brian loves games. And so we came up with this idea where, as investigators, we need to pay attention to everything. So in that last clip we just showed you, the clips are always 5 minutes or less, so it's not boring. In that last clip that we just showed you, what was the name that was written on the record player next to Brian? Most people would miss that. But if you go and you check your EVP recorder later, and you keep getting the name Edison, you're like, why is it saying Edison? Like, that doesn't make sense. Nobody there was named Edison. And you didn't notice that that was the record. Mm-hmm. Like, something was visually saying, I'm seeing something, I'm reading something that's near you. So there's audible clues, there's visual clues, and so each team gets points. So it's a game, it's an interactive adventure, and it's never the same one twice, because the crowd is always voting on where we're going to go, what we're going to use, and what we're going to see. And then we do onstage demonstrations, we talk a little bit of history. So it's educational, it's entertaining, and it's an interactive game, and it gets to show people things that they don't get to see a lot. So it's... Unfortunately, we filmed in the winter, so it was always very cold. But other than that, it was good. There's never hot water at places. So, like, if there's water at all, it's always cold. Every once in a while, you get a place, and it's like, oh, we got a hot water. I'm like, oh, yes. No matter what, I can at least go wash my hands and stay warm. I don't like being cold that much. The older I get, the worse it is.
We go to some investigations for paranormal and that, and it's in the winter, you know, and they're like, oh, we can turn the heat off for you and all the electrical. And we're like, no, please, please don't turn the heat off.
Yeah.
You can turn the power off. Just leave the heat on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're not here. We're at, like, sadists and masochists. We're freeze all night. I hate that. I hate being cold. It's hard to focus or concentrate, you know? Really is. And unfortunately, with GHI, it was always cheaper to send us to places off season. So it was like chasing winter. It was always, I think with the exception of Malaysia, it was always freezing wherever we were. Mm-hmm. So
that's when we film most of our paranormal stuff, is during the winter too, because during the summer we're out in the woods hunting big hairy things. So
There you go. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's nice. There's enough weirdness and dead people for everybody to go enjoy. You know? Find out what you like and go do it.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. I appreciate you taking the time and stuff. And,
oh, my pleasure. I'm sorry my story's rambling. I don't know what I talked about.
No, you're good, man. Right. We could talk to you the rest of the night if we had time. But so you got a lot of stuff here coming up. We wanted to point out some things that were coming up for you as well. So
yeah, sure, man.
The next thing, obviously, like I said, I lost the page here. Events. There they are.
Autographs is the next thing for sure.
Yep. September 17th in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And the website links are on my website at DustinPerry.com. So all the event stuff is there. And then we're going to go. So we go from Ripon, Wisconsin, down to Atlanta for Hauntlanta in Georgia. And I'm excited about that. It's first convention. Should be a great time. Great lineup of people. And Brian and I are doing a lecture there together. That's called Crossing the Streams, and it's talking about the intersection of paranormal pop culture with, you know, what we actually do in the paranormal. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun for people. We like to, Brian and I like to come up with unique things. If we're going to do something, we're going to do something different, you know, so it should be a good time. But yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming up and new things we add all the time. We're going to be down in St. Augustine, Florida, which is one of my favorite places. Lighthouse down there is great. We're going to bring pathways down there. So yeah, and we're working on some stuff for overseas next year too. So maybe going to England and France. So we shall see.
Cool. And you have a ton, I mean, like almost every weekend stuff with like library lectures and stuff too.
Yeah, the local libraries in New England have been so good to me. I've done a couple of Zoom, but Zoom's kind of fallen off, you know, since thankfully people go back to things. The local New England libraries have been good to me. Usually I'm booked like the last 2 weeks of September all through October, but with filming schedule and stuff, I couldn't do it all this year. Mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that I stay true to my base here. You always dance with who brought you. You never forget who helped you when you were down or when you were coming up. And the local libraries in New England have been so good to me. And so I'm thankful to still do some stuff for them. And I got a couple of Zoom ones for Florida and stuff too. And everybody's always invited to the Zoom things. It's been so weird. Like the last 2 years, you know, things have fallen off in the world. Everything's been crazy. And I had my two busiest years ever, thanks to being able to do this kind of thing, you know. There's sometimes I do 5 lectures a day. I'd be hoarse when I was done. But like I did 82 lectures last year. Like that's just crazy. So I don't know. People seem to like me and I'm thankful for the opportunity.
Definitely. Yeah, I know, like, for the people that are listening and stuff, I mean, the library lectures I point out because, like you said, some of them are Zoom. And people that aren't even in the area and stuff can go to the library's website usually and log in and watch those live as well. So even if you can't be there.
I've done that.
Yeah, absolutely. We got some
yours.
Cool ones.
Yeah, she's watched
I've watched a few Zooms of yours, yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Mama. I appreciate it.
You came on a little early before it was supposed to. And you were cold. Your power had been out.
That was like one of the first ones.
Yeah.
I was just getting ready to like try out Zoom, and all of a sudden, like the power's out and everything. I'm like, what am I going to do now? And I like hotshot my phone Wi-Fi to my laptop. Yeah. Like get a lantern out. I was like, what? Like who would have thought that would have happened? But of course it happened.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We make it work. But yeah, I'm just honestly. You know, like all these years, I'm just so thankful to everybody for constantly being supportive and following my journey. And again, like I know I'm not for everybody, but, you know, we can all support different people and like different people. But I'm thankful for the opportunity and all the people that have been kind to me over the years. And I've learned so much from guys like Zaphis and everybody. Like, I'm still learning my way in the field despite 30 years there. But I don't think we're supposed to have all the answers, you know. But I think it's important for us to look. And it's important for us to be nice to each other while we do so.
I think I told you at we saw you again at the Sault Ste. Marie convention last year.
Oh yeah,
I saw you again there, and I think I told you this, but I'm going to tell you again. She never had cable and stuff, so she never watched like Ghost Hunters and that. And I started watching like Ghost Hunters and Destination Truth and stuff, and I started getting into all that. So I was aware of who you were, and we were set up at the Minnesota convention. Right down from like where you were, only like a couple aisles over.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not a big, you know, celebrity hound or whatever, so I'm like, yeah, okay, it's Dustin, you know, whatever. And I walked past, I had to go to the bathroom, and I walked past your booth, and you were talking to somebody, and your phone was sitting on the edge of the table with Pokemon Go open.
You got
it. And I'm like, that's my man right there.
Yep.
And I'm like, I need to talk to him. And
I love
you know,
that.
I don't know if you remember Derek Tebow.
Oh yeah, little Derek. Yeah,
yeah. He was so happy with you and loved talking with you and stuff.
Yeah,
and I sent him to all the lectures, and he recorded all the lectures for us that day and stuff.
Oh really?
And so I don't get to a lot of the lectures because I'm at the booth talking to people and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm speaking and stuff and things like that. And I sat down and I listened to yours along with the rest of them. And I was like really shocked because, you know, I expected, you know, oh, here's some evidence or ghosts or something. And you went on this whole thing about motivational and the suicide prevention. And I'm like, I was really impressed, very happy with your lecture. Mm-hmm. And I even played it for Ma and made her listen to it. So I
made me.
She was a captive audience in the car driving somewhere when we're listening to this. And I was really impressed with it. I wanted to thank you for that lecture, and it was really impressive to me, and definitely not what I was expecting. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to see you in Ripon last year and see you again this year and have you on the podcast. So it's been really awesome having you and getting a chance to talk to you again.
Well, thank you so much. That means the most to me. I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
And we play Pokemon with you.
Yeah, we
are your friends. Yeah, I invited you to a raid yesterday, and you didn't come.
I didn't have any passes. Oh, okay. I'm all out of passes. Okay. I need to get coins. I have a strict budget I allow myself for Pokemon.
Me too. Because it was my last pass, so, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mama. I didn't mean to let you down.
It's okay.
Yeah. So we look forward to seeing you and playing with you and in Ripon with Pokemon Go.
Sounds
and stuff.
Great.
And
yeah.
I have one last question, and I'll let you get back to your busy life.
Yeah, no worries.
What is your favorite Pokemon?
Oh, my favorite Pokemon is Cubone.
Oh, that's mine too.
Yeah. Yes. I actually have a plastic Cubone that used to sit in the cup holder of my old truck, Angelina.
Uh-huh, mine
now
too.
It's the house. But yeah, I love that Cubone character. It's just, and then when you learn the story, like, I just like the look of them. The dinosaur with the skull head, this is great. But then when I learned the story of, like, how they, like, wear their mother's skull and everything, I was like, oh, my God, it's, like, so touching. So I just, I feel Cubone and I have, like, connections. So that's great.
Yep.
Good taste, Mama.
All right, Dustin, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time with us today. I appreciate it. We're so looking forward to seeing you on the 17th in Ripon. And hopefully everyone can come out, and you and Chris Williams and, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of people. Shane Pittman, Tom Arnold, Tim, Dana Strickler, Mary Marshall, Justin Libig. I don't
know who Dana's a sweetheart too. She's always a lot of fun. Yeah, he always puts together a really good group of people. So, and then there's bowling.
Yeah, totally.
You don't get to do that all the time. That's fun.
Awesome. So we look forward to coming to you. It is September 17th. Tickets are available. We have the link on our Facebook. The link is on your Facebook. Where can people find you, Dustin?
It's just at DustinParry.com. That's DustinParry.com. And also check out my motivational video series called Hey, Got a Minute, which is on YouTube. Just YouTube.com/DustinParry.
Awesome. Cool. And we talked about where else we're going to find you, so... We'll be out there, and we will, before this airs, we'll probably see you up in Sault Ste. Marie again.
Sounds good. Loving my Paracon. Always a good time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, well, thanks for being on the show again.
My pleasure.
Until next time, and we'll see you later. I am your host, Barnaby.
I'm Ma.
And I'm Dustin Parry.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. To find out more about cryptids, anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, visit us at our website at wisconsincaps.com. That's wisconsincaps.com. There you can find links to all of our social media, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and our Patreon. You will see links to our online store as well, where you can get t-shirts, DVDs, and more. If you click on the public events page, you can find out where you can meet us in person and all the public events we have coming up. If you enjoy our podcast or our YouTube shows, please consider becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/WisconsinCaps. There you can find behind-the-scenes pictures and videos from all of our media, as well as bonus footage and evidence that we have collected. If you have encountered something you can't explain, we want to hear from you. Visit our website and click on Submit a Report on our main screen. You can choose to leave your contact information or simply remain anonymous. You can also reach us via email at wisconsincaps@gmail.com. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please contact us on our Whispers from the Dark podcast page on Facebook, or send us an email at wisconsincaps.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen or watch or find us.